WHEL HD3 Philadelphia.
From the Piazza Premium Automobile Studios, powering your drive with 10 brands and 20 locations.
Always live on the free Odyssey app.
Kathy Barnett
on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Hello, everyone. How are you? This is Kathy Barnett. You're listening to The Kathy Barnett Show on the number one talk radio station in Philadelphia, covering most of the Mid-Atlantic states. So how y'all doing out there? Today, I have some amazing interviews I was able to capture during my time at the Job Creators Network in Savannah, Georgia. So first, you're going to hear my interview with the former CEO and vice president and vice chairman of Best Buy. He led the shift to customer-centric model and grew Best Buy to the global giant they are today. This is with my good friend, Brad Anderson, a wonderful conversation where we're talking about your story is not over. I know many of you think your story may be over. It is not. You don't know where your story is going. So hang on in there. And so we're going to talk about that, but then we're going to shift to my conversation with Trump's pollster, John McLaughlin. He was with President Trump even before he came down the escalator. So we had a really great conversation because really I'm interested. Are people buying what Democrats are selling? Here we go. What I learned in my senatorial race, those last 5 days, I spent 15 months, boy, and I was booking it.
I bet you were.
All across the state.
We
were literally doing 1,500 miles a week all across the state of Pennsylvania because I didn't have $60 million to compete and
basically.
I just had me, my voice,
right.
My determination, and what I believe to be better values. Right, I believe that these are better value. These things just make sense. And if you knew about it, you would have the good sense to vote for me too, right?
Did you worry about being, you know, because this was like the situation for me. It was so out of left field that having the, and I wasn't running for Senate, right? Because I sort of would have expected something like that.
Right.
Running for Senate. But did you worry about how does the world position me?
Right now, yes.
No, but I mean even in making the choice to run for Senate.
No, you know, because I was a stay-at-home mom, living my best life, just put a pool in the backyard. I had our summers planned, vacation where we were gonna go. I wanna go to Iceland.
Right.
So these are the things I was doing. But then I looked around and I said, my God, surely we can do better than these people. And I had never attended a Republican GOP event in my life that I knew of up to that point.
Wow.
But I, you know, of course, growing up in Alabama as a black person, I was a Democrat.
Right.
Not because anyone told me, it's just what you do.
Right.
But then I graduate from college. My background is economics and finance, and I am paying attention to how money works. And I'm listening to these policies, and I'm like, wait a minute, these policies do not affect community that I'm primarily a part of the way they're telling me that they do.
Right,
they actually
right.
have the inverse
right.
impact
right.
on, and it's intentional, it's insidious, this is not right. And so that began planting a seed as a young girl.
But that realization that it's intentional and insidious.
Yes.
Because right? it's not just like another point of view. It's a point of view with a knife blade on it.
And it's intentional.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yes, I'm sure there's a lot of ignorance. You know, there's a lot of, you know, they're the puppet masters and then you have the puppets. There's a lot of puppets running around here. They may genuinely believe that they're doing something good. But it's detrimental. And we're looking at the results of it. And you cannot tell me I can't believe my lying eyes. My eyes are not lying to me. I know what I'm looking at, right?
Yeah.
And so, yes, you do have that sense. Wait a minute. Who's interviewing who?
I was enjoying it. Stop I'll take it. Over your show.
I'm gonna put all this on air, Brad. Mr. Anderson, what? Let me tell people who you are. Brad Anderson, yes. JCN yes. Executive Board Chair.
Yeah.
Former CEO and Vice Chairman of Best Buy.
Yeah.
Led the shift to consumer to customer-centric model. And grew Best Buy to be a global giant. You are, as I said, a JCN board member. And I'm so very grateful for your time. So I want to thank you in advance. I don't know where this interview is going to go later on, so let me thank you in advance.
I'm long retired, so it's fine with me, whatever you want to do.
No, okay, so we're here, Job Creators Network. This is your second summit.
Yeah.
I have thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Oh, good.
I long since stopped going to places like CPAC and some of the others, because initially when you are a conservative and you're looking for like-minded people, especially as a Black person, because it's very lonely to be a conservative, like a principled conservative.
It's and
very,
brave.
People call it bravery, right?
What's bravery from my angle?
Right. I thought it was just, what's today, Friday? I thought it was just another Friday, right? Like, this is wrong, this is right.
Yeah.
You just stand up and you just do these things, right? But when I started going outside of my bubble as a homeschool mom and interacting with other people, and they would say the same thing, you're so brave. And I'm like, doesn't feel like bravery. It just feels like this is right, this is wrong. But over time, you realize that it really does, because once you become aware of what the opposition is going to be like, you have to make a choice. Now it becomes a choice.
And you have to, you can't be have your life anchored in what other people, if you're going to make this choice, it can't be anchored on how other people view you.
How does it have to be anchored?
You have to have something else that you believe in that's more important than the response you're going to get from other people.
You know, we have
that allows you to make that choice, and I think I see this and I'm standing there for it.
Yeah. I think I see this.
Yeah.
I say to people all the time, no one owns absolute truth, but I believe it exists.
I do too.
And I believe it's my responsibility to seek it out to the best of my ability.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then once I've found something that looks true to me, to plant a stake in it and then defend that territory.
Yeah.
And that does cause for bravery when you understand that people are going to write ugly things about you. Like at one point, people would Google me and I would say, start with page 2. It gets better. Bypass page 1. Because they are calling me everything except for a child of God.
Yeah, yeah.
On Friday, they said I was a potential Black Lives Matter member.
Yeah.
Because I am Black.
Yeah.
So I could be.
Okay, good. Yes.
But 2 days later on Sunday, they said I was marching with the Proud Boys. I was like, I can't be both of these people. I can't be both. A member of Black Lives Matter and Proud Boys, right?
But the other thing, you know, you said that, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. There is a arbitrary truth. It's not very easy to figure out what it is sometimes, right?
No, it's not.
And it's probably, like, I'm a big fan of the biblical parables or the biblical stories, but all of those stories look different to me when I was 20 than they do at 40 or 60 or now at 76. Mm-hmm. So there's the truth is still the same truth in there, but it's I see it through a different lens.
That is so true. And I think we have a lot of young people who are looking for something real.
Yeah.
Who are looking for something authentic. Yeah. I can see it. They're thirsty and desperate for something
but
real.
If they stay doing that, they got great lives in front of them.
I think so.
Right? Because, it's as long as you're searching, you keep that sense of searching. Mm. First of all, it stimulates your curiosity.
Yeah.
But the other thing is it's more fun to do what you did and take a stand that's independent of what people expect you to do than it would have been to just follow, I'm presuming.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely correct. You know, it's not easy.
No.
And there are, and again, I'm thinking about our young people. They are seeking truth. And I think that that's the Achilles heel, something that you said, and the way that you framed it. I think I look for, I'm not mindful of the journey. I'm looking for the end result. And I think a lot of us get trapped because we're looking for, okay, and then this happened.
Yeah.
Kind of like reading the Bible. You have the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
you have the end, and then by page two, it's over. So you have the beginning, the middle, and the end within a couple of paragraphs. But that's not life. That's not how real life works. It's a meandering. It's a.
But it's also like in real life, the story doesn't go where you think it's going to go.
Hmm.
I mean,
what do you mean?
You know, one of the stories I've always felt like the story of the prodigal son was if you wanted to get into business and you wanted to, rather than getting a master's degree in business, I would read that story. Because the good son, who is very useful for the family in the sense that he complies with everything the family wants him to do.
Right.
But at the end of the story, he has no wisdom and he rejects the taking of his brother back. His brother, who's done everything wrong, has the wisdom. Because of his own desperation, he's actually learned what the good son, who's gotten the rewards of being the good son, didn't learn.
I know.
And it's almost all of them have an arc like that, where there's like, okay, going in, I would expect, in a conventional story, I would expect it to go this way. Instead, it goes this way.
It goes
and left. Then I look at it and say, yeah, and that's like life.
That is so true. And I think that that's where a lot of us fall pray, because I want a seamless life like this from beginning to end, but instead life is like, oh my God, like, where am I going, what is happening? And we're so focused on trying to get to the end of whatever cycle of season of life I'm in that you forget the journey.
But you know, well, it's like, so when you set out to be centered, right, so you have in mind,
I'm gonna win,
and you had to, you wouldn't have gotten as far as you did unless you really had in mind.
Because
that you
who
were
in their
win.
Right mind run for a Senate race
without a lot of money, right, and just without a long history with it?
Yes, exactly.
So you have, and every I've got a chance to meet, you know, people like Steve Jobs that just transformed the world. They had that. Right. They thought they knew where True North was, and they thought that they were going precisely there.
Right.
And it was incredibly useful that they believed it.
And that,
because the usefulness of their having a different point of view from the rest of us and trying to get there, whether they made it or not, is the thing that makes life more interesting.
Uh-huh.
So if I'm, for anybody who's a young person, in terms of, you got to have, same thing happened in terms of running a business. You know, we had dreams about what the business would be. It wound up, in our case, the business wound up being far bigger than we ever imagined it would be. But we had this picture of what we were trying to get to. And then we jumped in to try to do it. And then you got some, everything wrong that happens on the journey there.
On the journey.
Like, you know, maybe you're thrilled that you didn't win. Okay, so, but you, yes, but you weren't when you started, right? And,
no.
But, and you still are different because you did the, I love your response, my friend. Hey, man.
It's like,
yeah. But you're a different person having taken the story.
Oh my goodness, I am not the same person.
Yeah, yeah.
I am not the same person I was when I started, but that's with most things in life. Right? But I think, you know, when you have people, like, suicide rates are really high, especially among our children, because again, they're looking at the beginning, middle, and boom, I'm done, right? All happening within the span of a Netflix movie.
Yeah.
But that's not life.
No.
And it is incredibly sad and discouraging and a lot of bumps and bruises. I did not appreciate being lied on and dragged all over the country. Like, that's not who I am.
But you're probably five times stronger after having that happen to you.
Let me tell you something.
Let me
tell you. You see things differently.
Right.
And really, as a Christian, this is, you know, my station, the number one talk radio station in Pennsylvania that covers most of the Mid-Atlantic. But it is not a Christian station. It is a secular station.
Yeah.
However, I refuse to compartmentalize my life. I made that decision a long time ago. Even when I was on the campaign trail, I would walk out, and if I wanted to say, I am so grateful to Jesus, I said it. Because I believe that's the only, again, finding some portion of truth and then holding on to it for dear life, right? And I believe God is true.
It was the same thing running a business.
Tell
it was
me.
A secular business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a, like a pastor's son from, so who, it, when I actually got into running, into actually being in business, I really didn't know what I believed. I stumbled into getting an opportunity to run a business. But I tried things out. And the more, it's like I talk about with a prodigal son, or in the biblical stories were the ones that actually gave me substance and work. So I knew these things had truth, and I also saw them lived out inside the business. Mm-hmm. But it's a secular business, so I can't just send you back to Joel. But it also meant that because I was testing the strength of that, those stories, for instance.
Yeah.
And the bounty of those stories that I had a true center, right? So it's okay to be not liked by everybody around you if you think you're pursuing something that's deeper. That's kind of what I was asking you about earlier, in terms of like, okay, if I don't win, that's all right. If people hated me, it's okay. If I know that I was authentically trying to do something that mattered.
Yeah.
And you think about that for any young person, it's like, okay, at some point you're going to be so depressed that you might even think you want to commit suicide. But you're just on the story. The story isn't over, right? As long as you're breathing, the story is not over.
The story's not over.
No.
Clip that.
And if you lose the Senate race, it doesn't mean that your real story hasn't happened yet.
That is so true. Although it feels very much
that it feels exactly like that, right?
It feels that way a little bit.
And it's sort of that, I think you want to live life with that intensity that you know you're going to win that race.
Yeah.
But you also, you know, you also need the what opens to you when you don't.
And that is, it's hard to explain. But once that race was over, Jesus and I had a come to Jesus meeting, and I'm like, what was that about?
I wish I'd been in the room for that one.
I'm like, what was that about?
Yeah, why'd you tell me to go do this, right?
Like,
and didn't I do it sincerely?
Yes!
Yes, yes.
And I ran it faithfully,
and I declared
your name,
yeah.
And I didn't back down. I spoke truth.
Right.
I put a smile on my face.
Right.
I loved your people.
Right.
Right? And I, with integrity, my team, I only had 3 people I paid on my team, my driver, my scheduler, and 1 field director, but I had thousands.
So you didn't waste a lot of money.
I didn't have any money, but I had thousands of volunteers.
Right.
You know, when you have to collect signatures.
Yeah.
I think you only needed, I don't know, maybe 2,000.
Yeah.
I got like 35,000, and I said, okay, y'all just stop now, right? I didn't have to pay anyone to go get signatures. People would work an 8-hour shift and then come and drive from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh just to deliver yard signs for me, right?
Right.
And I love them. I would generally be the only black person in the room when I walk into one of those Republican parties. But I was loved.
Yeah.
I felt the love.
Yeah.
I was their sister in the fight.
Right.
And I would not, and that meant something to me. Even after, because you mentioned a county, I see faces. I'm having dinner with them at their kitchen table talking about politics. And so I learned a lot. It opened my heart. When you're living in your bubble, no matter how, you know, magnanimous you may think you are, it is something to walk outside of your bubble and start interacting with the greater public and realize that everyone doesn't believe what you believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if you're in the same party, people have different. But I never had an argument. It was never contentious. I'm showing up at Black Lives Matter rallies. I'm walking up on the stage saying, what you gonna do about it?
Right.
And I never had an argument with anyone, right? Because coming with love and, listen, here are some hard truths. We've been lied to.
Well, and the irony of all of this is you do all of this and you know it's real and you get to the point and you didn't make it and Fetterman gets the job. Right? So, right?
I'm like, that's what they deserve.
But this, to me, is go back to the prodigal son story, right? It's like the prodigal son sits there and says, wait a minute. I stayed at home. I put through all of this. I was always there for the parents. I was everything else. This schmuck over here who goes off and wastes all the family's resources, and only after he's completely has no alternative, he comes back.
Yes.
And the meaning of the story is he gets received.
How is that fair?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people feel that way.
Everybody does. It's not, but that's what I mean by the story doesn't go where you think.
Mm.
But the wisdom is in the fact it didn't go where you think it should go. And there really wouldn't be, if you did all of that and you earned the position of being senator, which you probably did, technically, right?
I earned that.
Yeah.
I was going to win.
As an outsider, I'm looking at
Brad,
it.
Brad, I was going to win.
I sure as heck would have voted for it.
I was going to win, Brad.
We will continue with this special edition of the Kathy Barnett Show in a minute. See you on the other side.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Okay, so we are back and we're going to continue with my interview.
Yeah, Brad, so, I was going to win.
I sure as heck would have voted for it.
I was going right? to win, Brad.
but that's not necessarily where the story should go.
I agree. And
And since we don't know that about life, right, or any young person, right, you don't know where that thing is supposed
don't
to go.
Don't give up in the middle.
Right, right. And you're coming out of it with a different sense. The only problem for the good son, the only reason he's a tragic character is he didn't learn. And it's like we got the responsibility of figuring out, okay, all right, well, that wasn't meant to happen for some reason. But I'm still here. I'm stronger than I was when I started.
I am.
And I still got a role to play, and maybe a richer role than
I
you started with.
I feel that I have a role to play.
I guess you do.
But I feel like the resources to do that, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people struggle with, well, maybe my time has passed, right? But then I go back to the Lord and I say, but I feel very passionate that I have a voice, that I speak to people, and that people need to know what is true, what is not, and that's how this dialogue, without being ugly, like that's exhausting, being ugly and screaming and mad. That takes a lot of energy.
Right.
And I don't want to do that. That's just
right.
not who I am.
Right.
And yet I know I can move people, but then you don't see the doors open, or you see maybe those opportunities have passed me, right? And yet there's that aspect within me that keeps looking at Christ and saying, I'm going to keep holding on. I'm going to keep walking.
I think the core of that message is the door for any of us never passes. I mean, I'm 76, so I'm very close to the end of the journey. And I'm long retired and everything else. But I still, you know, and I'm not necessarily clear what I'm supposed to do at any given time, right? It's still blurry to me. But I know there's something I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
You know, there's something in there, you know, this is why I'm here, right? I don't have
it
to be here.
It does feel that way.
Yeah.
Like this is a pregnant moment.
Right.
I feel that there's something, I don't know what we're going to give birth to, but
yeah.
I believe it's a pregnant moment. Something is going to happen. I believe right now I sense it's all about getting my own house in order.
Yeah.
Removing the planks in my own eye so that I can remove specks out of other people's eyes, right? So being mindful of what I'm watching and disciplining myself. And I do a lot of speaking engagements. And so I talk to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like in this moment, even though I'm in a political setting, I believe we need to hold our families near. I believe we need to seek truth and order our thoughts accordingly. Get control of our thoughts is what I'm sensing, right? You don't have time to vegetate and float and allow your mind to drift on every kind of thing. That's what I sense this moment is pregnant. In this moment, this is what I'm supposed to do.
But you look at it, and you look at, you know, whether it's a lot of the things we think of, like I'm a former CEO and that kind of stuff, those are basically sort of structures that are put in place that have no real meaning.
Yeah.
It's so being a senator could have been something, maybe it was the right thing for you to do, and maybe you would have been spectacular as a senator, but that's just it's just sort of a description. It's not necessarily what you're called to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, they're descriptions of the job, they're not the job.
Yes.
They open up avenues for you to pursue in terms of, and by the way, responsibilities for you to pursue. But they're not necessarily what the, you know, each of us has as an individual call.
So
this is not a normal interview, you know. I mean,
well, you're a different kind of guy. Listen, look. I have 18 pages of a dossier. I have 18 pages of questions and my notes of studying different people who are here.
You know what I did in work?
What?
I tried to outlaw the use of PowerPoint, which are those slides to do demonstrations. And I tried to make, and I, whenever somebody would come in with like this, like that, I'd try to blow it up. Because I want this.
Yeah. Well, that's the reason why I put this here. I sense, let me just put this here. I'm going to read your title. I said to myself, I'm going to read your title, and then I'm going to pull out a pad and a pen, and I'm going to just close that and just have a conversation.
Well, everything is around the same. It's for me, it's the same biblical premise, that every one of us is a beloved child of God, and we all got talents, and we all got a reason to be here.
I believe that.
And then the question is whether we're going to honor that. And I don't think it's easy necessarily to figure out what it is.
No, it's not.
Right? I really don't.
Some people figure it out so quickly.
I had this one niece of mine who's 12, and she knew exactly what she could decide.
Oh,
exactly
my God.
What
I envy that person.
Yeah, I did too, but I don't now.
I envy that person, and yet I'm very grateful for who I am. I've had a very, you know, God was very intentional about making sure I got here. So now I'm here.
But he also, when you had the choices to make, you...
To the best of my ability.
You did.
To the best of my ability.
You tried to make honest choices.
I did. I did. And I do. Because I believe he exists.
Yes.
And I believe he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him.
Yes.
Hebrews 11. And so I believe he's real.
Yes.
And I'm going to stand in front of him. Again, this is not a this is a secular station. But
I know, I'm sure.
But listen, but you know what? But on this station, they talk about transgenderism. I don't hear anybody talking about it.
Well, that's a different religion.
but they talk about it.
Yeah.
And they talk about it with a straight face.
Yeah.
And they expect everyone else to kowtow down to
right.
it, right?
Right.
But then when you mention the name of Jesus, oh, whoa, no, anathema, right? We don't want to have that conversation. And I just reject it. I've always rejected it. I've worked very hard to be who I am, and to be in this seat has taken a lot to be here. I reject the notion that I have to cower down.
But at the end of the day, it means that your life is anchored, right? So that anchor is solid, and it's not gonna be the same as...
Yeah.
As others, but it also can allow you to fly free. It actually maybe require you
to do what though? Because that's the part. Like I am anchored.
Yeah.
I am not going to renounce what I believe, and I think I've proven that. My feet have been in the fire, and there are many times when I could have cowered, but I just rejected it, and the heat was hot, especially those last 5 days. But then what? Talk to people about when it doesn't seem
to be what you are
expecting
it to be.
Even if you're open to it not being exactly what you're expecting,
right.
It's just not happening. And you know, here it is: death by despair. I think a lot of people are dying of despair, of, how did the Bible say it? Hope deferred brings despair. Like you have hope, you have a dream, you feel a sense of passion, and yet you're just, it feels like you're wanting, you're waiting, you're taking advantage, but you're just in stuck mode. I think a lot of people in our country is in that kind of limbo of like, who am I? I know who I am, but like, where do I fit? What am I supposed to be doing? I'm ready to go. I don't feel definitive like your 12-year-old cousin.
Yeah.
Like, this is who I was born. No.
Yeah.
But kind of like, how did you say it? You have titles.
Yeah.
And then you have who you are. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's who you are, right?
Like,
it's what
the Senate is. A title.
A Senate is like, if you won the Senate.
But everything that will pour into that is who I am.
Yeah, but this, if you had won the Senate, it would have said all of these people of this expectation that was so hard to do, all of these people, the way they looked at it, you did sort of the impossible. You won the Senate, so you've achieved But that gets into the territory of a rich man getting through an eye of a needle. It has its own dilemma to it, right? So if you're doing that in a sense of service to something, fine. But it's always dangerous in the sense that because it's those, so many people I think get desperate because they get stuck in the artifice. It's like, I need to be a senator, or I need this particular thing in my life. But it's not the real thing, right? Because you would have been a powerful senator if you're a senator serving something else, not you.
Yeah.
And it's just so hard for us as human beings to, and the reason that line about it's harder for a rich man to get into heaven than his camel to get eye of a needle, is all of a sudden you start getting praised by others. And exactly right, right?
It's, look at me.
Okay, I knew all along. That's the worst possible way to read it.
Yeah,
you're and right. It's tragedy just goes with, and actually the deeper you get into life, the more you're going to experience tragedy. The more people you're going to love, things are going to happen bad to people you love. You got to be willing to experience the whole part of life, which means... You know, it can mean I'm in absolute abject sorrow, or people I love, I can't do anything about. But I'm also there for the whole experience of being alive.
For the whole experience of being alive.
Yeah, including all those people you touched in that process. Mm-hmm. You know, that might have been the reason to run for Senate.
I know there was so much good. There was so much good in that. But let me tell you something, just between you and me and the camera.
I think the camera over here knows you pretty well. I want to talk to him, too.
Had I won, I think, you know, I've had 2 years now. I think it would have said, see, I'm valuable. See,
yeah.
I'm somebody.
Yeah.
Look, world. I'm not this little black kid from a pig farm.
Yeah.
Right? On a, you know, no insulation, all this other stuff. I'm somebody.
But the biblical message is there is no such thing.
How about that?
And it was the reason for running it. Like, I didn't know what I was doing running a business. I got stumbled into running a business. But if you start with the premise that every single person is a beloved child of God, none more than any other, it kind of tells you what to do running a company.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first thing that matters. It's because in any company or anything endeavor, it's the human beings.
It's the human beings.
Right?
So God showed me that.
And every one of them, I'm no more than anyone else.
Yeah.
Is
just
that...
Just keep my eyes on him?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I am a stronger believer today than I was before I ran. I am striving harder today after him than I was before I ran. So to your point, now that I've gone through all that, I'm a stronger person. Well, yeah, I mean, I have those convictions. It's a choice though. It's a choice, I realize. I have to choose, because I can be bitter and that would destroy everything. And I would have every reason to be bitter because they literally took away what I had earned.
Right.
But so what?
Right.
I thought to myself when I saw Zelensky behaving like he did in the White House, talking about stuff that happened 8 years ago, that would have been me. 8 years later, I'm still talking about, remember when they did me wrong?
Right.
Nobody cares.
Right. Right.
Everybody's moved on.
That's always true, that nobody cares about that.
No one cares.
Right, right, exactly.
And
right.
I saw Zelensky behaving
and they're
like
going to go through their own life and say, well, wait a minute, you're on TV. You know, I never got to run for Senate. What do you got to complain about, right?
I saw Zelensky and I thought to myself, my God, that is what I would have looked like. Like, this man is literally talking about stuff that happened 10 years ago.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
And everybody's looking at him like, dude, realize where you are and what
well, think about
is
the
happening.
Deeper question, because he's a person, it, you know, like you are with an audience, or he's got that responsibility to a group of people, and look at how he's coding what he's experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And what's causing him to code it that way, as mm-hmm. opposed to alternative ways of coding it.
Right.
That goes back to what are you really anchored to.
What are you really anchored to?
Yeah.
So you gotta have an anchor.
Yeah.
And an anchor has to be more than an ideology. It has to be more than, you know, popularity. It has to be something real.
My favorite biblical book is Job.
Yeah.
Right.
Job went through it.
Job is right. Job has more to complain about than any of the rest of us ever did. Right. And yet his job is to stay there and continue to support the Lord.
I'm gonna reread that.
It was the one book as a secular guy I had to, when I couldn't find anything that was equivalent that I, so I had to still send guys to read Job sometimes, because it was the only way to figure out, because things happen in life, you know, that like running a company. So somebody comes up to me and says, I'm owed this. And I agree with him, he's owed that. But if I give him that, it'll destroy 13 different divisions of the company. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I'll have to fire 8 people that I probably should fire. But anyway, but, you know, so it's seeing ourselves in the context of what, of, because we have that significance, but so does everybody else. And we're in the network of those other people.
Yeah. And I love it. Brad, thank you.
Bless your heart. This is exactly what I know. It's not what I expected at all. Oh.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
Hello, everyone. We are back with the Kathy Barnett Show on WPHT 1210. We're getting right back into these interviews. We are here with Mr. John McLaughlin. You are a renowned poster. You worked with JCN, Job Creators Network, this is where we are right now at their second summit. But you were also instrumental with President Trump in his first term. What about the second one? Did you do anything?
Well, since he first thought of running for president?
When he came down the escalator?
Before that. 2011, before that, he thought of running against Barack Obama, and Dick Morris introduced him to.
I remember that.
We wrote a plan. He was going to run. He decided timing wasn't right because he had this TV show. They'd take him off the air.
Yes, called The Apprentice.
The Celebrity Apprentice. Mm-hmm. And so he put it off for 4 years. I've been with him ever since.
Yeah.
So I've been through good times and bad times with him. But he's always made his pollster look good.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. I mean, it's the authenticity factor of it all. And so he speaks right to the American people. Okay, I have you just for a couple of minutes. So let me just get straight to it. A couple of things. I was wondering the other day, is what Democrats doing working? Is it moving people, right? So whether you're talking about the Tesla, Molotov riots, the hands-off riot, Cory Booker sitting for 12 hours on the exact same stairs that Newt Gingrich ran down with a contract, Cory Booker is sitting. I think there's some great symbolisms there. But nonetheless, is it working? And some of the polls I've seen suggest it's not really moving a lot of people, but it is galvanizing their base. It's keeping their base alive and active and on their toes. What do you say?
Well, a lot of those polls, they want it to be working, but it's not. And a lot of those, so you're seeing polls now that the fake media, remember they put out polls, Hillary Clinton was supposed to be president. Remember there was a Hillary lock on election day. They were saying there was an over like 90% chance she was going to win. And on election day, I'm saying, no, Donald Trump is going to win, and it's going to be close, and it'll be electoral majority. That's what happened. 2020, they were saying, no, Joe Biden, blue wave. Out of a record 160 million votes, Joe Biden only won 3 states by 44,000 votes that decided the election, 11,000 in Arizona, Georgia, another 20,000 in Wisconsin. Uh-huh. So you had a very close election. This time around, Donald Trump, you know, he decided that we were going to try to win a bigger majority. He got very determined, very upset about what Joe Biden was doing, rolling back his policies, inflation, driving the country down, you know, open borders. So basically, our plan was not just to win an electoral majority, but to win the popular majority.
Right.
And he went after, we were doing polls 3 years out. Hispanic voters, African-American voters, women, younger voters. We were going after the four legs of the Democratic Party and trying to create a new majority. And he did it. And he basically, we got, you know, Kamala Harris happened to be an African-American woman, so she did
is
well.
Is she really?
Well.
Go ahead.
Donald Trump got 21% of the African-American
men. Absolutely.
And we won 46% of the Hispanic voter, record amount. We found in our polls that as Joe Biden continued to fail with high inflation, the surrender in Afghanistan, the open borders, there was 5-6% of the electorate had voted for Biden in 2020 was now voting for Trump.
Right.
And it could go to even higher. And a quarter of it was African American, a quarter of it was Hispanic.
I saw that.
The average age was 35.
Yeah.
And that's how we got our popular majority. That's how we won in Pennsylvania. That's how we, the Democrats were looking on election day for votes in Philadelphia. We said, it's too late. We kept on bugging the media. There's not enough votes.
Yeah.
We're going to win. We've done better than expected in a lot of places, and we won statewide. We need to call the election.
But if the things that Democrats are doing are not working, why are they doing it?
Your point is right. It's for their base. I mean, the AOCs of the world, the Bernie Sanders, the socialists of the world that are out there on private jets, those yes. people, it's for them. But also, they're trying to convince people that they want these failed policies back. I mean, right?
I know, but it's counterintuitive, because who want their nose to be cut off? So I see in the poll it's not working, yet they're continuing to do it. They're doubling down. Why?
This is the way they think they can win. And when you look at the fake polls, and President Trump this week, we pointed out, there was he got 50% of the national vote. He won them. He swept the battleground states, won the popular vote. And these polls that are out now, they only have 37% in the New York Times polls that said they were Trump voters. So they're doing that deliberately.
Yeah, intentionally.
And, so that's one and the same thing in the ABC Washington Post poll was 34% Trump
voters.
Right. They're doing that because, you know why? They want to win the midterm elections. They want us to stay home, the Trump voters to give up, surrender. Oh, he's not working, it's not succeeding. They want to, last month the inflation report was zero. But still a lot of work to be done to get prices to go down. But the jobs report.
But they're going down slowly but surely.
Slowly.
So let me ask you this then, two points out of that. One, let's go back to when you said about the strategy of getting all of these different groups of people who may have not moved significantly towards a Republican president before to move, and it obviously worked. And there was one after post-election study that had been done that showed every group of people, whether it's by age, 18 to 29, 30 to whatever, every group of people moved, whether black, white, urban, suburban, educated, non-educated, white, black, women, men, it didn't matter. Every single group of people moved towards Donald Trump in the November election, except for one group of people age 65 and over. And I would think to myself, there's no fool like an old fool. What is it about that? And then when you look at these rallies, hands off, and the Tesla, it's all, gray-haired women primarily who are out there, which kind of gives me some anecdotal backing for that particular report, that out of every group of people, only one group moved in the opposite direction away from Donald Trump. What is it about that 65 and over person? What are they thinking? Are they seeing life through a different lens? Is it just because they grew up at a time where you could trust government? But that's not the case, because the hippies didn't trust government back in the day.
No, but you know what? They're older and they're set in their ways with their political views. Mm-hmm. So there's not much hope for them. So if you're a Republican at that point and you're a conservative, you'll vote
you're
Republican.
Set.
If you're a Democrat, it's the younger voters and the newer voters that are more, your chances of getting them are better if you give them the right information and the right set of facts. The hard part is getting them the right information these days, because the mainstream media doesn't tell them the facts.
What do you think Republicans need to do for midterm next year? What do they need to do now? I think they need to pass the no tax on TIFs, the 20% pass through, the full expensing of capital expenditure to give. I think they need to do it sooner rather than later, give it time to work its way through the economy so people can feel it for themselves by July of next year. But what do you say we need to do to continue convincing people? Because the media is never going to be on our side. Let's just get it. So what do we need to do as a party to make sure the individual know
It's not just the party, but it's organizations like this, the Job Creators Network, outside of the party. It's more, because the most important endorsement is not some political figure. It's your friends and neighbors, right. your friends and family. And most people get their information from their friends and family. They get it from social media. So we have to go right to the people. Forget the legacy media. Just play offense. Go right to the people. Get the facts. Yeah. Every Democrat has voted for the largest tax increase in history. They want your taxes to go up $2,000-$3,000 this year. They voted against the Trump tax cuts.
Yeah.
They want taxes to go back up. They want to go back to open borders. They want to go back to the high crime policies where they don't support the police, et cetera.
Yeah. So none of that worked before, yeah. But they're trying to convince people. Last question, I know you have to run. What are we not talking about that you believe we will be talking about very soon, but you're seeing it in your polls, you're seeing it in your study. What are we not talking about that we perhaps should be talking about?
Probably education. I mean, right now, education, we're talking about, I mean, the Democrats are saying, oh, we're taking apart the Department of Education. Well, the Department of Education hasn't worked. We've spent, I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of money, like $260 billion. There's over $1 trillion student loans that are unpaid, that they're going, people are now going to have to go back to paying because they borrowed that money in good faith. And instead of having the taxpayers on the hook for that, they're going to move that over to the Department of Commerce, and they're going to have people collect those loans.
Okay, I hope you guys enjoyed it. You've been listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. I will see you same place, same time next week. Blessings.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.